This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to June 8th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. Well, we're here to bring you some answers, hopefully. Information is easy, but answers is more difficult. And maybe help be a calming influence on what we can do about any volatility we might see. We haven't seen much volatility recently. We had, what, 2-3 weeks ago, one big down day. Then the market slowly marched back up. We've traced it all and went a little higher. We haven't seen much volatility. We haven't. But it's going to come. It always does. When should you retire? That's going to be one of our talking points today, our main talking points today. Obviously, you can't retire until you have enough money, right? That's easy. That's an easy factor to consider. But there's other factors we need to talk about. Now, in today's market commentary on InvestTalk.com, I pointed to a lagging economic indicator to help put a yardstick to the economy. After 4 months in a row of increasing factory orders, April's factory orders number fell 0.2%. And that's really not a concern. It's really not. But it's always smart to watch inventory. Do you see if the inventories are building or not building? And you see that in the factory orders report. And inventory was up 0.1%, which is pretty small. It's up 2.5%. It's 2.5% higher than it was last year at this time. But it's interesting that it's more informative to watch the build or the lack of build. Maybe they're building inventory because there's demand. Maybe that's why there's inventory build. Or maybe the inventory is building because of a lack of demand. You want to look at a trend. Is it building or is it shrinking? And remember, this is a lagging economic indicator, not a leading economic indicator. But the goal here when you're looking at economics, the goal is to try to decipher when the next recession is around the corner. Because an investor, that's important information for you to have as an investor. Is the recession around the corner? What are the signs of a coming recession? One of them is increasing interest rates by the Federal Reserve. Increasing rates. Normally, you know, historically, and of course we are very unusual historical times, but historically, Federal Reserve has raised or lower interest rates at least 4 times in a row at the minimum. And if they raise in June, well, that'll be the 4th time. Now, that doesn't mean that a recession is around the corner. I'm just telling you, historically, they do at least 4 times in one direction or another in a row. And so all I am saying is this is the 4th time, and we'll probably have more. And that tells you that the recession is coming. Just can't tell you when. So you got to watch for lagging and leading economic indicators. Do you know what they are? How to determine? What is a lagging and leading economic indicator? That's something you can look up. It's pretty easy. Some of the lagging indicators is income and wages, unemployment rate, consumer price index, the CPI, currency strength, interest rates, corporate profits, balance of trade. They're all lagging economic indicators. You want to watch leading economic indicators. So have you thought about your strategy when the market does turn? I'm not saying we're close to it. I don't really think we are. I think we might be close to a correction, but not a turn to a bear market. Our listen line is always open, 888-99-CHART. What are you going to do? Anything if a bear market shows up? 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. So let's take this question that came in before today's program.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Big fans. Just wanted to hear your guys' opinion on the outlook for, let's say, about 12 to 18 months on the muni bond market. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate the insight.
They should be underperforming 12 to 18 months out. They should be. Why? Because the Fed's still on a rate-raising path. The economy is getting stronger, meaning they should support them to continue to raise rates. And when rates go up, bonds go down in value. So 12, 18 months from now, they should be trading lower than they are right now. They should be. Now, the problem is guessing that. What that doesn't have to be. So I would be my guess. My guess is they'll be lower in price 12, 18 months from now, higher in yield. Let's go to Walt in Berkeley. How you doing, Walt?
I'm doing pretty darn good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing good. I appreciate the call, and I appreciate this question. I think it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, yes, it is. I'd like to be a little bit more clear on the inverted yield curve. I also understand that it's an indication of a recession as well.
It's a very, very strong indicator of recession. An inverted yield curve, everybody, inverted yield curve. That is usually referring to the federal interest rates, short-term or two-year bond rates versus the 10-year bond rate. When the two-year bond rate, the yield, is higher than the 10-year yield, that's inverted, Walt. That's an inverted yield curve. So when the shorter rate is higher than the longer rate, the yield curve is inverted. Normally, longer rates are higher than short-term rates. Long-term rates are higher, and they are right now. And why would that happen? How does that happen? Well, when bond investors get scared, okay, they run to the safety of long-term treasuries. And when they run to that, that drives down the yield because everybody's trying to get in those, try to buy them. So the demand is really high, and therefore the yield starts to go down. And it goes down below the short-term yield. That's an inverted yield curve. Doesn't happen a lot. It's rare, actually. But when it does happen, it usually signals a recession. Okay, Walt?
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And maybe I can, if I had time, I'll look up the yields on the 2-year versus the 10-year and tell you what it is today. The answer depends on a lot of factors. Always does. It boils down to four main things that affect your financial, social, and emotional well-being. When should you retire? That's the main talking point today. And the answer depends on a lot of factors, when you should retire. We're going to talk about that. Also, I want to talk about the futures market. The futures market. Do you know the futures market started in 1877 in Chicago? I want to talk about it. I want to talk about the ECB. ECB, European Central Bank. They met today. What did they do? What was the decision? Remember, they're our equivalent of the Federal Reserve. What did they do today? Of course, everybody doesn't really know because everybody was focused on Comey's appearance in front of the, what is it, Senate or House representative, whatever it was. Everybody was focused on that, not what was going on in the rest of the world. And I think I also want to talk about all the talk about the death of the mall. I think it's overdone. You know, I told you to stay away from big box stores, but I don't think the mall will go away. It might change, but I think we need to talk about that too. Those are the things I want to discuss, but of course you always come first, not what I want to talk about, but what you want to talk about. The market was up today. The Dow was up 10. The NASDAQ was up 24. The S&P was up 1. So a pretty flat day, really. The NASDAQ is leading with it recently, and that's really a sign of strength in the market, where the NASDAQ leads all the indicators. The S&P 500, only up 1, is a broader read of what's going on. And I don't know if you noticed, but the Russell 2000, which is the small stocks, has done quite poorly this year compared to the others. It's up only a couple percentage points for the year, whereas the S&P is up more like, you know, 6 or so. So the small stocks have underperformed. And that is usually an indication of a lagging, or is usually an indicating of a topping market. When the small stocks underperform, usually they lead. But NASDAQ has been leading recently. But the NASDAQ is full of big cap tech stocks, not small caps tech stocks. The small cap tech stocks are lagging. It's really interesting. I think it is. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Do young couples talk enough about money? There's a lot to talk about. Joint or separate bank accounts? Who's going to pay the bills? Are you ready to stick to a budget? Let's talk about that. 888-99-CHARGE, our live listener line, every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Joe from New Jersey, longtime listener and relatively frequent caller, podcast listener. So I definitely appreciate what you guys do for the investment community. I'm actually calling about Magna International Inc. Class A, MGA, specifically as a long-term dividend growth investment with a time horizon of greater than 10 years. I guess my only issue is it seems to have a clean balance sheet, strong return on equity, low payout ratio, dividend growth since 2009 or 2008, the last 8 years. My issue is they had similar operating metrics circa 2007, and then with the economic downturn, General Motors bankruptcy issue as one of their large customers, they were forced to cut that dividend. So I guess my question is, how much are they at the mercy of economic cycles and downtrends in the auto market? Could a sudden and swift kind of movement in that industry lead to another future dividend cut, even though right now I think their trailing 12-month payout ratio is slightly under 19%. I appreciate any insight you guys have, and I look forward to the answer on the podcast. Again, thank you for everything you guys do. Bye now.
Okay, Magna International, MGA, manufactures automotive systems, assemblies, modules, components, and even, they even will complete a total vehicle. Now, therefore, being in the automotive, it's very cyclical. It's a very cyclical, meaning it's attached to the economic cycle. So when the recession hits, this will get hit very hard, just like all auto industry stocks will. You will be hit very hard in a down economy, in a recession. So but it does have a very low payout ratio. It pays 2.4%. So a very low payout ratio is making $6.56, means that hopefully it will maintain that dividend. It is a $17 billion company. It's not small. But the dividend will be under pressure in a recession. It has very good numbers other than that. The PE is very low. I mean, it's a $45 stock, going to make $6.56 next year. So you're talking about a 7 or 8 PE. The PE range is 6 to 13. Notice the range is very low, 6 to 13. That's because it's a cyclical stock in the automotive industry, and it's normally very low in that industry. So don't get excited and say, oh, it's really a low-priced stock. I'm going to go buy it. It should be a low-priced stock. Has pretty low debt, which is always good. Sales have been increasing recently. That's good. So it's a good, solid company. Good, solid fundamentals. You could buy it here. Just know that in a recession, it's going to go down. The dividend will be under pressure. But I don't know if they'll cut it because it is so low. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. So, when should you retire? It's always a difficult question. And I know that when you get closer and closer to the actual time, you get a bit nervous. You know, it's difficult because when you get to that point, you know your life is going to change. You know your financial life is going to change. You're no longer earning income. So therefore, that's number one thing you need to study before you retire. your retirement wealth. How much money do you have? Do you have enough? Now, it's very difficult because many people, on average, have only about $72,000 when they approach retirement. You're going to need a lot of money. You're going to need income. And that's about how much you're going to need on average, is $72,000 a year. And both, you know, because most people, you're not going to spend much less in retirement than you are before retirement. Now, many people are going to be forced to spend less because you have to. So you got to think about how much money your money can produce. How much money are you going to get Social Security? How much expenses are you going to have? Is it going to go down? One of the reasons why I constantly talk about paying off your mortgage before you retire, because that's a big expense in retirement, a mortgage. Another big expense you have to think about is health care. If you have to retire full Medicare age, are you eligible for Medicare? Sometimes the cost, you know, you have to pay for Medicare even in retirement. It comes out of your Social Security. You know, if you don't retire and you go on Medicare and you're not retired, in other words, you're not collecting Social Security in retirement, you're going to have to pay the Medicare premium. I think it's around $300 a month right now. So it's not going to come out of your Social Security check. You got to pay it if you're going to go on it. So think about all these things before you retire. There's other issues too. You know, you can't just... having a something to do in retirement is extremely important. Having some kind of purpose or reason, maybe even another job that you like, it's important. Don't just think you're going to sit around and do nothing. You better have something to do. So think about that in retirement. How much will housing cost? How much will that be a burden to you? How much having a purpose? How much is healthcare going to be? And do you have enough money? And if you can't figure all that out, talk to somebody like me. We'll help you figure it out. Most time for free. Now, of course, we may have ulterior motives to maybe help manage your money, but I don't do that. I'll help you for free. I don't. Of course, I want to, but you know, I want to manage your money, but I don't need to do that to help you answer these questions because it's hard. It's hard. You're not used to it. You don't know how it works. So ask somebody. Ask me. Ask somebody who will do it. Most people will help you for the first time for free, and I will help you all the time for free. So don't worry about that. Tops on our list is always answering your calls, so bring your question to us anytime you want, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, I'm a long-time listener, called a couple times. I was wondering what your thoughts are on the date-targeted IRA options. Like specifically, my wife has FFTWX, a Fidelity 2025, a retirement-targeted fund, which is a fund of funds. I'm wondering if her options are to use a manager to manage her retirement funds, or we could leave it in this account, or do the investing on our own. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on these date-targeted funds. Thanks. Bye.
I'm not a real fan of them. I don't like target-dated funds. Not that they're terrible. I don't want to say that either. What I don't like about them is they ignore reality as the retirement date approaches. For instance, this is Fidelity Freedom 2025 fund you're talking about. So at 2025, what happens is that date approaches, every year it approaches, the fund itself buys more and more bond funds and less stock funds. In other words, it's on a glide path of buying more bond funds. Now, of course, what kind of bond funds? That's very important. So you need to know what kind of bond funds we're talking about. And it ignores reality. It might be at a very time that the interest rates are very low, and that's not necessarily a good time to have bond funds. So you may want to not be in a lot of bond funds in 2025. But in this kind of target dated funds, it's automatic. You're going to be in a target dated fund, in bond funds, when the date approaches. It's automatic. And I don't like that automatic part. Be sure to sign up for our Invest Talk Insiders program. Each month, we deliver an economic and market forecast to our insiders. The latest one just went out today. Also, insiders get to revisit chart lessons whenever they want to, recorded webinars whenever they want to, and watch lists. It's free. Just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com.
Our podcast continues next on Invest Talk. One of the KPP financial solutions that help solve today's retirement puzzles is waiting for you. How do you get the income you need in retirement without the kind of risk that you just don't feel comfortable with? KPP Financial has a whole catalog of investment programs suited for today's investment climate and designed to suit your real-life situation today. Would you like to know more about the Balanced Income Program, for example? You can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts or ask Steve directly about it. Just click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com and your note will go directly to him and he'll answer your question. The Balanced Income Program is one solution from KPP Financial. And now let's get back to the podcast. Let's continue now with Invest Talk, Thursday, June 8th. Financial advisor Steve Peasley welcomes your call right now. Any money question, 888-99-CHART is how to reach him right now.
Hi, I listened to your show, podcast it, and listened to it the next day, and I have a question. My wife has a Roth IRA, and I just started putting that money into some mutual funds. And she just started it, so there's only about $6,000 in it right now. But I heard somebody else call in and said that they only had $10,000 to invest, and what's the best way to invest it? And you recommended ETFs. She's in Fidelity, so I picked a couple of mutual funds. What is the benefit of picking ETFs over mutual funds? Can you please explain that? Thanks. I'll be listening on the next pod show, and I enjoy your show. Listen to it all the time. Thank you.
Mostly because that amount of money, that small amount of money, should be in index funds or a broad mutual fund. And if you're in an index fund, ETFs have, you know, numerous ETFs that are index funds, and they're cheaper. The management fee is cheaper. So if you don't have a lot of money, and you're going to be in index funds, you might as well use ETFs because they're cheaper. Okay, so that's the only reason. I'm sorry, my mic is a little low. That's the only reason that I suggested ETFs over mutual funds. Mutual funds are fine. You know, a broad index mutual fund or a broad, you know, a mutual fund in the stock market, they're fine. But ETFs are cheaper. That's it. It's that simple. Nothing fancy or exotic about it. 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T, is our listener line number. You can call it whenever you want to. The ECB, European Central Bank, met today, and they took a little bit different stance than they have been. They have been very, very loose on money, looser than our Federal Reserve. Our Federal Reserve started to tighten up a couple of years ago by cutting out the bond buying aspect of the QE, quantitative easing, and then started raising interest rates. The ECB is still buying bonds and have very low interest rates. They have not started to raise them. So they took a really, really tiny step today to tightening. And what that step was, the announcement, you know, the ECB and the Federal Reserve always makes announcements after their meetings. In their announcement, the ECB announcement, they said today that they're probably not going to lower interest rates anymore. Ooh-wee, was that brave of them. That's all they did. Remember, the EU, European Union, is getting stronger economically, and so is Japan. So this is their big policy change. forward guidance remains the same, but we're likely not to lower interest rates. Before, it was we're likely to lower interest rates. Now they change that to that they're not. Okay, so don't get too excited about them getting any tighter with their money. They're not. So I thought that was kind of funny, actually, if you want to know the truth. Let's go to Austin in Cleveland. How you doing, Austin?
Good, Steve. How you doing?
Good. I thank you for the call.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been listening for about a year now on iTunes. And,
well, thank you.
I have a question for you today. Mm-hmm. So I just turned 21 recently. I'm a senior in college. And so my dad and my grandfather had a couple stocks that transferred over into my name. Mm-hmm. So, but I was thinking about making I've been saving up trying to make a first addition to it. There's mm-hmm. no oil exposure in the portfolio right now, and I was thinking about maybe taking like a 3-4% position in either Schlumberger or Halliburton.
Okay, both of them
and,
are.
I think just they're pretty attractively priced right now.
Yeah, both of them are very low price compared to their fundamentals because oil has been very low price, and Halliburton and Schlumberger kind of in the same area. Halliburton provides reservoir completion and drilling services and products worldwide to upstream oil and gas industry. So that's what Halliburton does, and so does Schlumberger, really. Halliburton symbol is HAL, and that's the one. And it's fallen from $58 down to $44 and had a lot of support in the low 40s, a lot of support, excuse me, meaning that it probably won't go below that. Sales have been falling all for many quarters in a row, except for the most recent quarter. It was up 2%. Pays a dividend 1.6. You're going to buy this stock because it's low price. That's why you would buy it. It's going to make $2.72 next year per share. It's a $44 stock. Okay? So that means it's what? 16, 17 PE. That's not really cheap, Austin. It's fairly priced is what that is. Okay, so if you're going to look at Halliburton, don't think you're buying it on the cheap. The best time to buy big oil companies like this, and Halliburton's a big oil because it's a $38 billion company. The best time to buy them is in a recession, but you're not going to get that for a while. You're not. So if you need oil, you really want to wait for a correction at the very least, Austin. And, you know, you might be better served to buy Chevron or Exxon, one of the big oil companies. I'm not recommending you buy them. I'm not supposed to even mention names like that on the radio. I'll probably get in trouble by the SEC. But you really want to buy, you know, a Halliburton, a Chevron, Exxon, a Schlumberger, at least in a correction. Because we have a glut of oil right now. And, you know, these things have fallen because of it. I think they might fall a little further. To be honest.
Okay,
Austin?
All right.
Okay, good luck. I hope it works for you. Thank you for the call, and thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How you doing, BJ? Do you want to talk about Euro investing? Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So you just mentioned Draghi's comment that they are not going to lower the interest anymore.
Nope.
Recently, a lot of money moved to Europe.
Yes.
What do you think the future of international investing, especially European investing, comes?
I think Europe is
mutual fund benefits.
I think Europe is actually going to turn around and has already started to turn around. And our economy is just starting to grow. I think it will grow more. So I think it's a good time to invest. I would love to see a correction before you do that, but you may not get it. So I might stick your toe in Europe at this point. I really might. I think it might be a good idea.
What's your view about the dollar? Will the dollar have an impact with the European currency? Euro will gain strength?
I think,
will go down from
it? I actually think the dollar is not going to get stronger. I think the euro will get stronger against the dollar. I don't think it's going to be anything dramatic. I think the Japanese yen will get stronger against the dollar. I think the dollar, you already seen it. If you look at a chart, you're already seeing that the dollar is not nearly as strong as it was last year. This year has kind of been selling off, even though our economy is getting better. And I think that, I don't think the dollar is going to crash or anything like that. I just don't think it's going to get stronger against the other currencies, I think the other currencies will actually do better than the dollar. Okay?
So that will bode well for international investing anyway.
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, BJ. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Good question. Thank you for the call. When you approach retirement, there are some complex decisions to make about your home. Sell it, downsize, rent it out, of course, pay off, fix it up, pay off. There's things you got to decide. So maybe we need to talk about that. You know, Justin is a licensed realtor. You can talk to him about that. You can just click contact Justin, send him an email if you want on investtalk.com, and he'll get right back to you.
Click on our InvestTalk Insider section on InvestTalk.com, and you'll see these stories and many more. This city will help workers pay off their student loans from CNN Money. From USA Today, three things your student loan servicer might not tell you. Also, tips for buying a house on a single income. Important money topics from respected sources. Just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and look for InvestTalk Insider.
888-99-CHARLIE. Let's talk to Steve in Oakland. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, how's it going, Steve? Love the show.
Thank you.
I listen to it every day on station. I have a question for you. I really like Philip Morris and their products that they have, mm-hmm. and I actually have invested in Philip Morris. I'm up 38%. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you think about Philip Morris and their company. What are your thoughts about them? Should I maybe sell, take some off the table? I'm up 38%, so wondering what you think.
I think it's really close to its peak. I think that you've done very well. It's at the high point of its five-year PE range of 27. And, you know, you've done really well. It depends on what kind of buyer of Philip Morris were you, Steve. Were you buying it because you like the dividend? Because your dividend rate will be over close to 4%. Now it's 3.4%, but you bought it much cheaper than it is right now. So was your idea to hold it for the long haul for the dividend, or you felt that it was going to give you a good rally and you'll take the profits of the rally when it happens? What was your thinking at the time of purchase? So
great question, and I was thinking about hopefully rallying up, and now it's, you know, it's more than 5% of my portfolio, so I'm a little shaky on whether I should just sell it off. So my goal was to just have it go up, and unfortunately it has.
Then I at least sell half. This is what I would do. I'd probably sell half and have a tight stop for the other half. In other words, if it falls more than 5 to 7%, I'd probably take the other half off the table as well. Wait for it to fall, because it will fall back to a certain amount, and then maybe if I wanted to get back into it at that time, I would. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thanks for the call. Because it's Philip Morris, everybody. They, you know, manufacture cigarettes worldwide. It's a $188 billion company. It's a big blue-chip company that's going to be around for many, many, many years. So if it's a core holding, you would just hold on to it. But that wasn't what Steve said he bought it for. He bought it because he thought it'd have a nice bump up and take some profits. Well, then this is the point where you start to do that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We've talked about it ad nauseum, probably boring a lot of you out there, about, you know, be very careful about buying big box department stores because of so much trouble they're having. And, of course, they're always in the mall. So is the mall going to die because of that? No, the mall is not going to die. The mall is going to change, and I've mentioned that as well. The mall is going to be different than it was before. They're going to have different kinds of activities. So if you're buying a REIT of a mall REIT, real estate investment trust, you are going to have to, you know, they've been under pressure. They've been under a lot of pressure, but everybody knows that, right? So there's people out there that feel that this is the time that you might want to start consider a mall REITs. Because a malls, you know, no matter what, are still going to be around. And there has been, you know, studies and some quote-unquote experts say that 70% of retail sales will still take place in a physical store by 2020. So Amazon's not going to take over everything. It's just that many stores are going to have a online solution. But, you know, if you're looking for income, mall REITs might be a way to go, might be something you should consider, because they have been beaten up so much. Therefore, dividend yields are pretty high. But you have to have your eyes open. There's going to be difficulties. So be very careful which REIT you're picking. Okay? But doesn't mean you don't... See, I don't want you to get the impression that, well, I'm not going to invest in that because, you know, Amazon is killing them. Yeah, well, that's true. But is it going to be... How about outlet malls? You think that they're going to go away? I don't think so. And their prices are already low. So remember, if you're talking about a mall REIT, maybe looking for a REIT that has focus on an outlet store. Our first priority is answering questions from you, of course, no matter how or when they come in. So let's pick up a call that came in before today's program on our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. My name is Derek, and I'm calling from Toledo, Ohio, a podcast listener. I had a question about the stock Eaton, ETN, and I was wondering if you could give me a comment on it, what your value was on it, and how much they were going to be making this year and next year, and if the stock was undervalued or overvalued. Thank you very much.
Okay. They're going to make $4.22 this year. They already made $4.22 in 2016. They're going to make $4.64 this year in 2017. $4.64, that's 10% more than last year. And another 10% growth next year, 2018, to $5.12. It's a $75 stock. So it's right around 15 PE. 15 PE based on next year's. The range is 9 to 22, so it's kind of right in the middle of the range. So it's neither cheap nor expensive. A decent return on equity of 13%. Sales are very, it's a $33 billion company, Eaton, ETN. It provides electrical power and control equipment, hydraulic systems, truck drivetrains, and aerospace pneumatic systems. It's a $34 billion company, big company. It's a good, solid company. Dividends very strong at 3.2% and very consistent, so you don't have to worry about that. And the only thing is that it's not going to be exciting because sales are just now turning around. And the stock has already made a good run ever since last July when it bottomed out at $54. It's now at $75. So that's a, what? You know, a 50% return? You know, so in a year, almost a year. So it's done very well. And I would wait. It's starting to kind of last 4 days, kind of fall off $78 down to $75. I think you want to wait. It's a very good company. You want to buy it when it's cheap. And it's not cheap now. It's not expensive. It's just fairly priced. But you want to buy it when it's cheap. And I'd wait till it be cheap. I'd be patient. You listen to Invest Talk. We'd love to hear from you before our hour's up. 888-99-CHART. Monica's holding in Menlo Park. Hold on, Monica. We'll get to you. She's next. Then we'll talk to you. Monica from Menlo Park. How are you doing, Monica?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
So I have purchased some stocks that's in brokerage account, that's outside the retirement account, and this is like 2011. And so some of the stocks have doubled and stuff like that. And so I like to take profit, but then I don't want to pay taxes. And do you have any suggestions for that? Oh, I can continue to hold on to them because some of them pay dividends.
Well, are you worried that you don't want to pay taxes? Do you still like the stocks? Do you still would like to hold on to them?
I can't hold on to them, but I think at some point they're going to, you know, drop.
Okay, then one way you can do it is you could sell. So let's say you have 100 shares of AT&T. I'm just going to pick a stock. You can sell short, sell short 100 shares of AT&T and still hold on to your original and sell short 100. What that means is that stock will go up in value, the original ones you have, and the shorts will go down and vice versa. So it would be a perfect, what we call a perfect hedge. You won't make any money. You won't lose any money, no matter what the market does. So if you're afraid it's going to go down and you're going to lose your money, You can hedge off that risk by shorting the exact same number of shares of the stock that you're worried about. That would work.
I see.
Now, that means that you don't have to sell it, but you won't make any more money, and you won't lose any money if the market rolls over and goes down. Then when you want to, then when the market goes down or the stock goes down far enough, you get out of your short position, and you still own the stock, not a lower price, that you never lost any money. You see?
So I understand the concept, mm-hmm. but how do you do that? I mean, I have a gross account online. How do you do that with another?
Okay, there should be a way to select, you know, when you do a trade online, there should be, when you do, you can put 100 shares in, the name of the stock, and then it says, should be a box where it says sell short or SS. If there is not, that means you are not in, do you know if you have a cash account or a margin account? Do you know if you open one or the other? Anyways, let's say you don't know.
It's a cash account.
Okay. In a cash account, you can't sell short. So you'd have to change your account to a margin account. Then that will show up, sell short. And you probably have to talk to your brokerage firm, you know, to do that. And you tell them you want to sell short. Another way, without having to change your account, is let's say you have $5,000 in that stock that you're worried about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You could buy an ETF that sells short the entire market, like SH, for instance, sells short the S&P 500. This would be another hedge, but it's not perfect. In other words, the market will go, if the market goes down, turns over, the short of the whole market, the position will go up while you're losing money in your stocks.
Okay.
But at least you're hedging off some of the risk. These are ways to hold on to your stocks and try not to lose money at all. Okay?
Right. So I have like Pfizer and all the
big blue chip guys.
Yeah, like Eli Lilly and you know, those are big ones. And
yes.
So, you know, I know they will write. I mean, they kind of cohort holding, so
they'll hold
nice
up.
Take profits.
Yeah, you could. You don't have to take profits. You just want to hold on to them. Nothing wrong with taking profits, and to rebalance your portfolio. But you can sell those shorts. Those big ones are easy to sell short. Thank you for the call, Monica. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you. 888-99-CHART 888-992-4278. Okay, we're going to talk about the futures market tomorrow. I'm going to run out of time. I would like to talk about the futures market. It was started in 1877 by 12 guys who founded the Chicago Board of Trade. So we'll talk about that more in depth tomorrow. What is the futures market? Do you know? I'll play it tomorrow. Time's up for the hour. Before I go, a reminder, I will be in San Jose on June 14th. Times are filling up pretty fast. That's next week. So if you want to meet with me, you need to make that appointment quickly. Go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. That's June 14th in San Jose. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley and president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for being with us today. And let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.